Money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round. Money makes the world go round, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck or a pound, a mark, a yen, a buck or a pound is all that makes the world go round. That clinking, clanking sound can make the world go round. Money, 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 money.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Pavlina Chernova, who is a professor of economics at Bard College. From 2000 to 2006, she served as the associate director for economic analysis at the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability. Since 2007, she has been a research scholar at the Levy Economics Institute, and she is the co-editor of Full Employment and Price Stability, the Macroeconomic Vision of William S. Vickery. Welcome to Background Briefing, Pavlina Chernova.
Thank you, Ian. Good to be with you.
And I just was speaking with your fellow economist, Stephanie Griffith-Jones, who's at the meeting with Joe Stiglitz and a group of international economists at the International Macroeconomic Corporation Conference in Washington. Of course, it's inescapable that the discussions are turning to the extraordinary behavior on Capitol Hill. So we should also comment on that. I'm sure you have something to say.
Well, to use the words of Ben Bernanke, we're in a state of a self-induced paralysis. Ben Bernanke used this phrase to describe Japanese policy during the period of deflation, the lost decade of Japanese economic policy. I'm afraid that the same thing applies to Congress today, and that we are just grinding our economy to a halt due to self-induced obstacles.
And are you in any way encouraged by the offer from John Boehner and the Republicans that they will stop the self-inflicted wound up until about just before Thanksgiving and start all over again?
No, I'm not at all encouraged. I'm afraid that this mode of policymaking is going to become the status quo, that going ahead, we're going to be using either the debt ceiling or the budget to basically prevent the government from functioning on normal basis. And certainly these debates are very counterproductive. The shutdown will have a real impact on the real economy.
And are you surprised by the complacency on Wall Street? I mean, the Koch brothers, who have been widely vilified, and I think justifiably so, did write a letter to the Senate saying we're not to blame, even though they are funding and encouraging these Tea Party groups. And
yes,
perhaps they feel they've gone too far. But I haven't heard much from the titans of Wall Street except them sort of saying, well, there's zero chance of this happening. And you get the impression that complacency is not entirely called for when you're dealing with extremists.
No, absolutely not. I think there are two things going on. One is the debt ceiling, and I think that just Wall Street knows that the debt ceiling problem will be resolved very quickly. The second thing is the impact on the real economy. It's not very clear immediately what that impact is going to be, but we are already seeing some signs of problems. Initial claims, unemployment initial claims jumped up. There is some technical problem with the increase, but there is an indication that already private firms that are getting government contracts are not getting them, and they are laying off workers. So I suspect that this will continue. There will be an impact on overall demand and consumer confidence, at which point Wall Street will react. They will price this into their forecasts.
So already, though, as Stephanie was pointing out, already the T-bills, which everyone in the world wants to buy, I mean, this is what's so bizarre about this self-inflicted wound, that America is the favorite place for people to park their capital. And U.S. has an enormous advantage for being the reserve currency. And, you know, now there's a bit of a slump in the T-bill market. The cost of interest is going to go up, which means all of this adds to the deficit. So for all these deficit hawks who are holding this gun to the head of their country's economy, I mean, they must be economically illiterate not to understand the hollow nature of their argument that they are concerned about deficits when last time around 2011 we got downgraded, and that means the debt gets more expensive. And this time around, already the T-bill market's drying up. So
yes. that definitely is will have some impact, although interest rates are still, as a proportion of the government budget, are not very large proportion. So you will have, you know, obviously, you know, the cost of borrowing increases and has an impact on government spending. But let's think about the other problem. When you try to cut the deficit, is it actually possible to do so? All of the austerity measures that we have seen in Europe, and we have plenty of examples to look to, have indicated that actually economies are slowing down and pushing government budgets into greater deficits. So they're quite counterproductive. If you're attempting to cut government spending at a time when the economy is not doing well, and you are undermining that meager growth you have, you're actually undermining the entire object of the exercise. I would say that reducing the deficit in and of itself is not a proper object for policy to begin with.
And of course, it's coming down at record speed in any case.
Yes.
So is there any way then for a rational argument like the one that you're presenting here and that previously Stephanie Griffith-Jones presented, is there any traction for it? Are we living in an alternative universe here between rational thought and irrational action?
What is the way out? Is that the question?
Well, I'm just trying to think, does it count? Do rational arguments count anymore? Because we're having them all the time. We're saying, you know, these are the reasons why this is what's happening, but I feel like we're just talking to ourselves, you know?
Yes, it's certainly what is happening on Capitol Hill does not seem rational at all. I think the general public understands this, and you know, probably that will be reflected in the polls, except we don't have the luxury of waiting to see the next election, because it is today that we have to take some meaningful action to, deal with the ongoing functions of government, but also to make sure that not only we don't undermine the slow recovery that we have, but that we actually have some, you know, move ahead with growth and employment, very importantly. So I very much think that this is a bit of an alternative reality, and we are going to either muddle through, which would be the best case scenario, or we are actually in for some serious headwinds.
Again, I'm speaking with Pavlina Chernova, who is a professor of economics at Bard College. From 2000 to 2006, she served as the associate director for economic analysis at the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability. And since 2007, she's been a research scholar at the Levy Economics Institute, and she's the co-editor of Full Employment and Price Stability, the Macroeconomic Vision of William S. Vickery. Let's turn to Janet Yellen, and obviously, I suppose it's appropriate to have two female economists on today, but there are also indications from her votes on the Fed that she may well be less interested in the QE, $85 billion a month going to Wall Street and perhaps getting some of it to Main Street, getting it to community banks. And I know they voted in the minority on that, but now that she's the chair, perhaps she'll have some more heft. Also, she's indicated that maybe she's more interested in dealing with unemployment than, say, inflation and the other focuses of her predecessors. Is that a fair summary?
Yes, I think it is a very fair summary. It is without a doubt that unemployment and employment issues are going to be front and center of her policy, at least if we are to judge by her past research record and her past testimonies. She has built a career researching the problems of unemployment. She's a serious scholar. She's an excellent forecaster, very qualified, and as she herself says, you know, these are not statistics to me. She takes the dual mandate of the Federal Reserve quite seriously. And I expect to hear a lot of discussion before Congress in her testimony and various public statements that will focus on the issue of unemployment, which will be a big step forward from the current situation.
So, is there anything else? I mean, I know that it's sort of trite to say that you're a woman economist and she's a woman economist, and this may be good for it's a good thing. Obviously, it's a good thing that women are promoted and the glass ceiling. Curious enough, in this country, you have this paradox where a little under 50% of households now are headed by women who are the principal breadwinners. But at the top, in the corridors of power, the glass ceiling is still very much intact. So it's not often that women reach high positions in corporate America, and certainly heading up the Federal Reserve, which is often referred to as the second most powerful job in the world outside of the U.S. presidency. So,
Certainly this is a victory. It's a hard-earned victory, but it's a victory nonetheless, considering that she's the most qualified candidate, and yet she was not the first choice of the president. There aren't too many heads of central banks around the world, but there are some nonetheless. Some developing countries have female heads of their central banks, like Argentina and Russia. So I would say it's about time. We definitely have underrepresentation in our central bank in presidential or posts or chairs. But I want to go back to the employment issue. The power of the bully pulpit of the chairwoman is not to be underestimated. And to the extent that Yellen will focus the discourse on the problems of unemployment, and to the extent that she brings forward these notions of maximum employment or full employment that we used to hold near and dear decades ago, that's a very good thing. It is a separate question whether the Fed itself has the tools to get us to full employment. So, you know, these are two separate issues that we have to distinguish. And my sense is that the Fed can do something, but probably not terribly much, to move directly the unemployment rate down.
And Pavlina Chernova, what about the idea of stimulating community banks, getting money to ordinary citizens and consumers, many of whom are underwater on their mortgages? Is there a possibility that there'd be more of a focus on trickle down to Main Street as opposed to subsidies for Wall Street?
I think that that will be a positive step ahead. Community banks are vital for our economy, and data even after the crisis indicates that they had picked up lending to small businesses during the crisis when the big financial institutions were drying up funding. So they are really vital and they need to be supported. The question is how this will be done. What are the tools that the Fed has? Janet Yellen has spoken about the tools that Bernanke has used, and it seems that she will probably continue with QE and with forward guidance, but then potentially opening QE to buying assets from smaller financial institutions, the commercial banks. The question is whether that in and of itself actually makes a difference for banks and their lending abilities. QE1 has stuffed financial institutions with lots and lots of reserves, and that hasn't really translated into a lot of lending. Will the same policy translate into a lot of lending for commercial, for small community and regional banks? I think a much more viable policy might be a policy of some sort of loan guarantees or some sort of implicit or explicit guarantees of refinancing by small banks and providing, you know, loans to households and individuals. So I think it's probably going to come more from the guarantees and the regulatory side rather than from the QE policy itself.
And what about Dodd-Frank, which has been watered down considerably? The banking lobby has been quite zealous in trying to, they've sued it to death and slowed it down, and the Republicans have been trying to thwart the new Consumer Protection Bureau and defund it and stop the head from taking up his position. So it's been going on rather relentlessly. There are indications that Janet Yellen is actually quite sympathetic to more Wall Street reform, more oversight.
Yes, it's not quite clear where she will stand on regulation. We know that during the Clinton era, she did go along with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, but she has always been an independent voice, and she has spoken against the mega mergers that were taking place in the late 90s. She had warned about the problems with securitization and subprime lending in 2007. So I think that she understands the problems, the regulatory problems that we are facing. I'm hopeful that she will move that needle also in her position.
Well, Pavlina Genova, I thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Pavlina Genova, who is a professor of economics at Bard College. From 2000 to 2006, she served as the Associate Director for Economic Analysis at the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability. And since 2007, she has been a research scholar at the Levy Economics Institute, and she's the co-editor of Full Employment and Price Stability, the Macroeconomic Vision of William S. Vickery. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how the Koch brothers are distancing themselves from their Tea Party protégés.
Constructive with your blues. The cars, the sounds, the cars, the cars, the cars of the year.